So I'd like to go on to my talk. I'm picking this window, this fourth window from the back to my left. It's my Lord and my God in John chapter 20 and page 22. Now, Thomas, one of the 12, was not with the disciples when Jesus came. So the other disciple told him, "We've seen the Lord." He said to them, "Unless they see the nail marks in his hands and put my finger where the nails were and put my hand into his side, I won't believe." A week later, his disciples were in the house again and Thomas was with them. The doors were locked. Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." Then he said to Thomas, "Put your finger here. See my hands, reach out your hand and put it into my side. Stop doubting and believe." Thomas said to him, "My Lord and my God." Then Jesus told him, "Because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed." I'd like to try to go to another point which demands a little vulnerability. When Jesus called the 12 apostles, so this is what I was praying about, and I'll do my best to articulate it. When Jesus called the 12 apostles, he called these men from the midst of their occupations. And he didn't give them much formation, a couple of years. But we saw through the scriptures that they fought who was more important. Peter found himself talking the most, putting his foot in his mouth the most. And we see these little insights into people like Judas and Thomas, because there's a little bit of all of us, or a little bit of those guys in us. You know, Judas, for all of his poor choices, you know, if he had only turned back to God at the time he got that bag of money, turned back to God, there, Pope Benedict said, yeah, there would have been great redemption. The church has said that too. If he had just turned back, if he had just not considered it the unforgivable, it needed to happen. Christ needed to die. You see John, the beloved disciple who so deeply loved the Lord, the one who leans his head against the heart of the Lord and sits at the foot of the cross and takes Mary home in John's gospel. And then there's Thomas, and Thomas speaks to all of us. He's like the everyday man in a way. How did he miss out? Where was he? And then sort of that doubt. Faith is flavored with doubt. That's part of the journey. But I'd like to say that somewhere in your heart and in the heart of your spouse, maybe there's some doubt lurking around that causes this accusation. When I started out to say yes to the ministry of healing in the way that I express it, there was tons of doubt, tons. And I thought, I don't really want to do this. So doubt sort of tried to grip me and choke me and say, don't do it. I would like to ask you to really pray that, what is the doubt that lurks around in your heart and what you think the doubt is within your spouse? And I'm going to give you a teaching in a moment, but sometimes that doubt is a family of origin issue. It's like where we've come from. It can be the result of my occupation, my life. But because you've married that person, did you ever think that your doubt and your struggles are just like an opportunity for Satan to pull you both down? My weakness, my spouse's lack of faith, my transparency in saying I have this weakness, her lack of faith, and everything falls apart. my weakness, my spouse's incredible faith, my desire to be transparent. And then I can proclaim my Lord and my God because my spouse becomes an instrument of grace for me. My point is that I find sometimes that there are weaknesses in marriages. There are transparencies on the part of spouses, their at least desires. But the lack of faith prevents that. It's necessary that you work courageously to have a faith that says, my Lord and my God, when there's the doubt lurking in your spouse. Maybe you were the Thomas at some point, and she's just becoming that Thomas who's saying, I'm not believing. Okay? But there's two steps in Thomas. I don't believe in my Lord and my God. I think there are times when we play those different roles in our relationships. Things are on all cylinders when you're both saying my Lord and my God at the same time. That's what the ideal is. When a couple is saying my Lord and my God at the same time, they are truly blessed. But if one is staying rooted in doubt and the other is saying my Lord and my God, then the couple suffers from doubt. When you grow up in an atmosphere that's unhealthy, or when there's been like a pattern of sin, that place becomes a place of doubt, either in you or in your spouse. Now, I want to be clear. It only needs to be in one of you. If it's in one of you, the marriage suffers from doubt. So even if it's in one of you, you may say, I'm never going to have a drinking problem. But if your spouse grew up in an alcoholic home, and you never know because that's genetic, that spirit of doubt is lurking around in the marriage. Okay? And it becomes a burden, and you don't even know it. I want to make a connection. I think there are folks that struggle with the burden of doubt, and they don't even see it. They make it as a connection, like this is natural in faith. I want to separate it and say, no, it's something different. This flavor of doubt is different than the one that's the fruit of a struggle in faith. It's the wound. It's a deep wound. So it can be from family or work that some of you have picked up that burden and you don't even know you have it. Okay? And it's the place of doubt. Okay? The habit of sin. And it's like an inner suit of armor that's weighing you down. Okay? And it just holds you down like chains. That is the place that of doubt where people can stay stuck mentally, emotionally, physically, psychologically, sexually. Okay? My experience is that spouses can bring that liberation with the grace of the Lord Jesus Christ. But there has to be that effort and that courage on your part to say, I know that something may be weighing me down. You may not even know it, but sometimes, like last night, being prayed over, or there's something you're like, I know it. And then all of a sudden it comes up. And you have to let it come up. because that's where the grace is. Otherwise, it roots itself back down into a greater place of doubt. And Satan then holds on to that. Does everybody get that, more or less? In just the awareness of the culture, okay? And what is actually the place of liberation can be actually the place of real frustration. Unless you continually assent to Lord, yes. Okay? Is some of you with me? Anybody? Does anybody not get it that I can explain more? I think that your ability to address it is important. The human and divine in that encounter are very important. Thomas has to touch flesh in order to believe. He doesn't just sort of look at it in this pie-eyed encounter. He's got to get his paw in there and get all mucked up inside of Christ. That is what we're about. The doubt isn't that I got to touch. Here, the doubt is, am I willing to say my Lord and my God? For many of you, you've already touched. Are you willing to say my Lord and my God? It's significant. It doesn't necessarily have to be rooted in an emotion. It's rooted in that faith to know that God is calling me to that. Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. He is the light of the world. He's not the shadow of the world. He is not a shadow. Notice the gospel. Come on. Go ahead. Give me your finger, buddy. Give me your hand. Let's get all fleshy. Satan doesn't want that kind of encounter. That's why he gave you your spouse, because you got to get fleshy. That's where you will come to know love and life and truth. The God that at every Mass, the church says, take this, all of you need it. This is my body. It's got that flesh to it. It isn't just sort of a theoretical concept. As Catholics, as Christians, we actually take Jesus pretty stinking literally. People say, well, I don't believe. I'm like, well, what's the scriptures say? It says, well, it says body, that metaphorically. Well, that's not what the verb eat means. The verb eat means to gnaw. I mean, he wanted us to really chew it up and get in there. Take this, all of you, and eat it. Eat, like consume. Let it not be just a shadow. It wasn't just enough for the people of Israel, the new covenant with Christ, just to eat a lamb. The lamb shank wasn't enough. He wanted to give himself. Jesus comes to cast out the shadows. Folks, once that freedom comes out of the shadows, becomes your day of liberation. Yes, I can be a Christian my whole life, but if I remain in the shadows, I do not know the dignity of my personhood. God does not change. Your awareness of him does. To say, my Lord and my God, means ultimately that you are willing to live in freedom. When a person carries that backpack, that burden for a really long time. They don't have any idea what it's like not to have that on, that burden of sin, your family of origin, I called it the inner suit of armor, inner bulletproof vest. You don't even know what it's like. What's it mean not to have that? I've had that for 50 years. Okay? And what happens is as you take it off, you're like, man, I'm really pooped out. But you've developed the legs to be able to run the race now because you've had that on and you've tried to keep up. God has blessed your perseverance. And so you can run the race even better. It's a grace that God gives to you. It comes, you need to make a mental shift. A mental shift. I'm no longer what I once was. I imagine as a police officer, if the handcuffs are on, that's one thing. If the criminal thinks they're on, even though they're not, that may be just as effective, so to speak. If the Christian realizes the chains are off, there's a different purpose now. Pope John Paul, on the 50th anniversary of his priesthood, he wrote something beautiful, but he also wrote something that I often go back to. He talks about the anamkara. The anamkara is the Gaelic word, the Irish word for soul friend, S-O-U-L, friend. Ultimately, your spouse is supposed to be your anamkara, your soul friend. It's a great Irish tradition. It means somebody who knows you very, very deeply. As a Christian, your spouse is to be a light in the shadows of your life. They are to go in as a light into the world and into your shadows, the doubt. They have that light of Christ within them. When we have that light burning brightly within us, it casts out the shadows around us. One of my prayers for you, and a few of your talking points, will be to recognize that there are graces that your spouse can win for you if you ask them to pray for the shadows, to pray for the doubts. I don't like this about me. I wish I were not like this, angry. I wish I didn't have this look about me or this fear or this body image or whatever. There's 1,000 of them. And to say, can you help me by your love overcome that shadow? We always say shadows creep. Little by little by little, they creep in, and they always take up a little bit more space. It's the same with doubt. It tries to take up a little bit more space. And yet, you know, it doesn't have to. What would it look like, and I would ask you to pray about this, you know, to share with your spouse a moment where there was some sort of liberation, where you saw a powerful movement of God, and then to share with your spouse a shadow that you would like them to help to be overcome, for you to overcome by their prayer or by their sacrifice or by just that awareness. There is freedom waiting. There's freedom waiting for those that want to be freed. Can you imagine Thomas when he got back and like, where were you? Where are you? Gosh. And yet, God, Jesus went there again and he said, come on, let's get this over with. Let's let you be a witness of faith to these other guys that thought they had it all figured out. Go ahead. Not only are you going to meet me where, not only am I going to meet you where you are, but I'm going to help you surpass them because I want you to reach out and touch. Maybe Jesus upbraids him in the last paragraph, right? Because you've seen me. Blessed are those who have not seen and believed. I don't know. Maybe just Thomas needed to touch because your marriage has a little bit of Thomas in it. You got to be fleshy. And so that touch of your spouse, that act of support, it becomes something very, very beautiful. I'd like you to go and I'd like you to share with your spouse, hey, yeah, what is there that's a shadow? Is it a family member that's sick? Is it a fear? Because that doubt creeps in and it can be in some concern, maybe one of your kids. But then I also want you to understand that there's also an inner doubt that's probably connecting to. And to really try to talk it through and say, yeah, this is a big concern. Okay? So my son's struggles in school cause me great doubt. Am I doing the right thing? Am I doing good as a mom? Am I spending enough time at home? And all of a sudden, all the doubts start accusing you. And then you can stay frozen. And then from there can be a place of anger. Why are you late? You're supposed to be home earlier. Don't you know you got to do, I'm not good at math. Help him with his math homework. But I think I want to stop there. I was going to talk on suffering, but I think I'll just stay there because I think that needs to be a point of communication. If there is that awareness, eventually you have to really pray it through because it's hard to reach into his heart when he's had that suit of armor on. And that can be, it doesn't have to be, I'm a failure. It's a doubt. But it's where your spouse comes in and says, I can help penetrate that armor by my marriage. By my marriage. But it demands like a total surrender. Many folks have this, and I have been telling folks this, and they don't really hear it. You know, I just want to say, Ephatha, be opened. Let me tell you what I hear. And once that's freed, then there's freedom, generational freedom. Okay? So does that give you something to talk about? Does everybody kind of see where I'm going? Yeah, more or less? Okay. Glory be to the Father, and to the Son, and to the Holy Spirit, as it was in the beginning, is now, and ever shall be, world without end. Amen. In the back of the chapel, there's holy water, salt, and oil. You can use those to bless your spouse. You know, the holy oil. I am a big advocate of asking people to anoint their spouse. I know definitely that some of you have done that on a regular basis. So you take the oil and you pray over them and you bless them. You folks with elderly parents, like, don't miss the moment to, and they don't have to be 1,000 years old or on their deathbed, but like, make sure that you bless them. I mean, think about all the times they've changed you and fed you and all that stuff, and now you're giving back. And it's very, very consoling for you when they die. Very consoling. Because one of the last things you did was give your parents a blessing. So, you know, and it's beautiful for your children to do it as well. So, just something to pray about, okay? See you at 11, folks. God bless you.